to put in all the work, everybody for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit and we go towards our goals together as one.
For Martins, it's Sven Angulo to cross into the box. That's one missed it.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, and we are back yet again on Thursday night. That's our new recording time, so that's why you're getting episodes Friday mornings. But not to worry, I've been putting out some solo pods with my thoughts before and after each of the matches, and I intend to do that for as much as I can this season. I'm sure I might miss one or two because I'm busy, but that's life. Here to do some podcasting with me is my lovely co-host, Adam. Adam, how you doing tonight?
We're doing all right, doing all right. I'm getting over a cold, but, you know, those things happen. And so if I am a little sniffly, that's why, but mostly fine at this point.
Good to hear. I'm glad you're getting better. That's why you weren't on last week's. But we'll still ask you some of the same questions that I asked Daniel on last week's. And we'll do that later in the pod. But want to start, just get straight into first match of the season. Got to dig back into our memory banks at this point. This was Saturday's matchup against Montreal. And want to just start with the starting lineup. And the big storyline from the starting lineup is Martin Ojeda starting on the bench and Nico Lodero starting over him, it seems like. And that was really the only piece of rotation other than Santos coming in for Cal Smith and Brocalo coming in for Schlegel, who was unavailable. So, but the big one, obviously, Nico Lodero. What were your thoughts on that decision by Pareja to bring in Lodero for this match?
So I thought it was, for me personally, a little disappointing, but also not unexpected. I personally think that Martin Ojeda is one of our best players, one of our probably three best players. And if this season is going to meet expectations, he needs to be a starter, just in my personal opinion. That being said, we saw the signs from what they were saying, how they were acting the entire preseason, that they brought in Lodero to be an important player, and he should be, and that they were treating him like a starter, and that Ojeda obviously was on the bench all last season, even though he did actually play in every game, I'm pretty sure. So it wasn't surprising that Lodero got the start over Ojeda. I think Pareja also mentioned that there is actually some consideration to giving Lodero the captain's armband that ultimately went to Janssen, I think rightfully so. So it wasn't surprising. I personally would not have done it. I would have Martin Ojeda being a starter, but you know, Lodero is a more traditional midfielder versus Ojeda is a through and through attacker. And, you know, Oscar Pareja likes that that three in midfield. He likes the defensive solidity that that brings, the ability to counter press, the ability to match up with any type of midfield shape. And so I think that tactically it's very Poppy-esque. I just would have liked a little more aggression.
And probably some consideration in terms of who we were playing in that decision as well, in my opinion. Montreal, I think before the game, everyone expected them to be more defensively minded, including the coaching staff. And I wonder if Lodero was being brought in to help pick the lock on a team who might be sitting a bit deeper. You could also say that Ojeda with his runs in behind would be the guy to pick the lock as well if he got that service. So you could go both ways with it. But obviously don't know all the information that the coaching staff had, but I agree. I was pretty disappointed to see Ojeda starting from the bench for our first match of the season. Let's shift to the back. Bricallo, instantly in. Daniel and I predicted that if he was available, he wouldn't start just based on Pareja's past experience or our past experience with Pareja and getting new players. But Bricallo was instantly in and looked pretty good.
I mean, you had Schlegel suspended, so he kind of picked himself. I don't know if Schlegel would have started if he were available. I think that, and we're going to talk about the Cavalry match a little later, I think with how Schlegel played in the Cavalry match and with how Bricallo played in the Montreal match, Bricallo should be the easy pick as the starter going forward. And I think he showed that in how I was a little surprised at how high Bricallo got at times. I mean, we play a high line normally, but he was getting into midfield and making even runs into the box at times. And I'm just like, I had to do a double take because I'm like, is that 4 or 14?
Right? I'm like, right.
Is that really our center back making a run at the other team's center backs? And I'm just like, I think if you look at Bricallo's scoring record from every single team that he's played on in the past, he is a 99th percentile scorer as a center back, goals and assists. He averages about 5 gold contributions per season every single place that he's played. I fully expect that to continue with Orlando City.
May even increase a little bit. I mean, he almost got on the score sheet in this game. I remember one time we clipped the ball over to the back, over the defense after a set piece, I believe, and he was the one heading it towards the goalkeeper. But yeah, I agree. If anyone listened to my instant reaction, I also was pretty surprised at how high he was stepping up, both on offense and then defensively. He seemed to be the stopper, per se, in the defensive pairing. He was the one stepping high up and engaging with the forwards with their back to goal, whereas Janssen seemed to be covering more and sweeping up at the back. So let's start the game by talking about our slow start to the match. I don't know if you were able to watch from kickoff, but we really struggled in those opening 10 to 15 minutes, I thought. I thought we were really unable to get around Montreal's press, and we kept giving the ball away in some dangerous areas. I personally put that down more to the way Montreal set up and then our willingness to play into dangerous areas where Montreal then picked us off. So it's a little bit of our... I don't know if we were just being strict to our principles of buildup, especially, you know, first game of the season, everyone wants to follow coaches' instructions. So were we just being a little bit too strict because it just clearly wasn't working and then we had to change it? Or do you think that's more Montreal were just really, really good from the beginning of the game at putting us into positions where we weren't able to get out and they were able to break?
I think it's a little bit of both. You have, so from Montreal perspective, they have a new coach, Courtois, who is a Wilfred Nancy disciple. If you're familiar with Wilfred Nancy, he kicked our asses pretty much every time he played us with Montreal, and then knocked us out of the playoffs with the Crew and was the eventual champion. They have a full go-ahead, very aggressive style. They're not going to hold back. And it's clear that Courtois is going to try and impart this mentality on Montreal. And despite the talent gap between the two sides, because I think there was still a noticeable talent gap throughout the entire game, they did not back down. And I think that Orlando City wasn't quite expecting that. So it, you know, kind of punched him in the mouth a little bit. There's also a little bit of arrogance that good teams have, especially teams that know they're good, like Orlando City, that have had sustained success for a few years now, and that we're going to play our way, and it's up to the other team to stop us. I mean, they stopped them. Orlando tried going through the middle with the combination play and the passes into the dangerous areas, and that usually works for them, and it didn't because Montreal's system was set up in such a way that through the aggressive pressing and through clogging the midfield, it wasn't there. Took him about 10 minutes to figure that out, start going up the wings, using the fullbacks, pushing them higher, sending Torres on the left side to play as more of a traditional winger than an inverted one. And then Angulo doing the same thing with Dagradon on the right. And it took about 10 minutes to figure that out, that the buildup needed to be on the wings rather than through the center. And it was all good from there as far as getting the ball from our defensive third through the midfield and into the attacking third. And in the attacking third is where we had issues.
For sure, yeah. I agree with everything you just said there. And I don't fully blame us for having issues with that, considering Montreal really loaded the center of the box. And if you're going to score a goal, you're really going to score it in that little central zone in the box, right? You're going to have to score a worldie from any sort of angle. And we weren't even really taking a whole bunch of shots from that angle. Instead, we were making a lot of crosses. And they just had that, you know, they had the three center backs back there. And then they had that, the two defensive midfielders, the two midfielders, all dropping into the center of the box. And we just could not break it down. I'm not too upset by that, because of the way that they set up.
I mean, you see it a lot of times, I think, in the English game, where you'll have a team that's overmatched and they will play that sort of clog the middle style, try and get a goal off a set piece or off the break, and generally play with a more aggressive mentality in the conservative tactics, and, you know, kind of be a little chippy, go in hard for tackles and try and make the game difficult and try and snag a result that way. It's a little bit, you know, them showing Orlando City respect is, okay, this is a contender here that's coming in. We're coming to their house. We need to play a certain way to try and mitigate their game. Sometimes it works.
Yep, and it definitely worked in this match. Speaking of going into tackles, usually I know you were talking about the defensive team, but Cartagena went into a pretty big challenge close to the end of the first half, and then got fouled or gave away another foul a couple minutes later while already on a yellow card, and was, in some people's opinion, lucky to not be sent off either with a straight red or a second yellow. So he had to be taken off at halftime just with replacement referees. You never know. You don't want to risk it. First game of the season. Let's not start it down to 10 men. We have a busy schedule coming up, yada, yada. I think that was the right move by Oscar Pareja. What did you make of Cartagena's end of the first half?
Yeah, he was lucky not to be sent off. Very, very lucky. And I think, honestly, with more competent refereeing, he would have been sent off, because it's the kind of challenge that you just can't make for the safety of everyone, including Wilder Cartagena. And when a player makes such an unsafe action, it is the official's job to make sure it doesn't happen again. Usually that's with a red card. It was dumb. He shouldn't have done it. We're lucky that it didn't bite us in the ass.
Yeah, I think that's fair. When I first saw the challenge, I was like, oh yeah, yellow card. That makes sense. I was at the game, so I didn't see the replays on TV. And then I saw it again, and I was like, ooh, that was close. And then, of course, you got the foul a couple minutes later, and it's like, what are you doing, dude? So, and I know that one was more of like a 50-50 foul, and that's probably why the ref didn't call it, but you really can't give that to the referee to make that decision. You got to just be smarter than that. So I'm glad Pareja was very quick to get him off the field, for sure. And that did bring on Ojeda. My take on his performance is he looked like he needed to be starting the match for us. I mean, it's that simple. Obviously, it's hindsight, but dropping Ladero a little bit deeper and keeping Ojeda higher in that second striker role that we've been using so far this season, that's when we looked the most dangerous, I think. Ladero actually, I thought, looked better in the second half than the first half in that deeper role where he had a little bit more space to operate. But Ojeda looked like a threat. He looked like a threat. One of the only players that did really look like a threat throughout the entire match. What did you think about Haida's performance?
Yeah, I thought he was one of our only dangerous players, especially with Faku having a bit of an off night. Ojeda consistently got in dangerous positions, consistently created half chances. We didn't really have that many great clear-cut chances, although the one to Ramiro Enrique where he forgot that he had 2 feet at the end of the game and could and should have scored yeah. or set the ball with it, but and Ojeda was a part of that chance too. Martin Ojeda is just, he is the type of player that you put him on the field, and when you do that, the result is goal contributions. He is so good at finding the spaces where goals come from and finding himself in those spaces, knowing what to do with the ball when he gets it there, knowing how to find teammates, knowing when to take a shot, when to be selfish. His decision-making is superb in terms of shot versus pass. I think that he was almost the lone bright spot in the attack. And especially with his counterparts being Ladero and Torres and the other playmaker roles on the team. Both, I think, had sloppy games where they were consistently not finding their passes. They were predictable, I think, both of them in their decision-making. They didn't really try anything to wow the defenders, do anything special, which you need to try and do when you're facing a low block like that. Although Montreal did play with a high line at times, but when they need to get back on defense, they brought everyone back and killed off any chance we had to counter. Ojeda was the only one who was consistently finding a pocket of space to operate in. So he needs to be on the pitch at all times, pretty much.
Yep, absolutely. He needs to be starting. And I really hope that this is a lesson learned for Ojeda or Pareja and the team and the coaching staff. Faku Torres, you mentioned him. And you and I both had some frustrations that we shared via text after the match with his performance. After a strong showing in CONCACAF Champions Cup, he came tonight and, or not tonight, he came in that Montreal match and failed to live up to the expectations, I would
say. Forgot he had 2 feet.
Yeah. Another showing of dominant left-footedness. So much so that he was turning out. Sorry, go ahead.
I just think that's the one knock on Faku, because he does everything else. He's a decent passer, not an elite passer, but decent passer. He's got a great shot on him. He's got quickness. He's got acceleration. He's got top speed. He tracks back on defense. He's a great teammate by all accounts. He's very positive in his interactions with fans, with media. Man doesn't use his right foot, and it makes him so predictable. And I don't care how good that inside step inverted move is. If every single time your opposition knows it's coming, they can defend it. He needs to add more moves. And same thing on the left side. If they know you're never going to cut in from the left side and you're always going to cross the ball if you get on the left, which is why I've been advocating for Faku to go up more through the middle, because he's very, very dangerous in between the channels, because he's not as predictable. That's where his talent can really shine. He gets more shots off. Once he gets free inside the channels and he has more options for moves, because he can go left or right and it's not quite as obvious, he can still go right and get it back on his left foot, then, you know, he's more productive. But if he's just stuck with the either crossing from the left or inverting from the right, he's not going to be the MVP candidate that we want him to be.
Exactly. Yep. Well said. I'm really interested to see what he looks like with Muriel, especially in those central spaces. We saw how good Muriel was in the cavalry match, and we'll get to that in a minute, at connecting with the player behind him. It'll be interesting to see if the plan is at some points in games and build up phases to get Faku more central, connecting with Muriel through the center of the pitch. Last few things I'll call out. Kyle Smith comes on for Brocalo. In the stadium, I saw Brocalo pointing at his leg after getting subbed off. He was talking with the coaching staff and maybe a physio, and he was pointing, indicating something with his leg after getting subbed off. So hopefully it's nothing, but we did not see him against Cavalry. He was on the bench, didn't come on, totally normal in the circumstances. So maybe it's nothing, but I'm going to worry until I see him again.
I mean, he's not on the injury report, which that could mean something, could mean nothing, but it's a positive sign.
Yeah, positive sign until they put him on there. And then he's out for 7 months because
once you get on the injury report, you're on it for the rest of the season. He's not on it yet, so we're good, right?
Yeah, that's how it works. And then lastly, Galese at the death. I think, not even I think, he saves us a point. Opoku gets through on goal. Opoku is someone who I would expect to finish the chance that he had there. And Galese smothers it, gets in a good block, and keeps us from the embarrassment of Montreal coming into our stadium opening weekend and stealing 3 points.
He also had 4 saves, I think, in the first 10 minutes.
Yep, he had the double save on a shot from long range, and then it bounced out, and someone followed it up, and he was already up and ready to contend with it, and then a couple of pot shots. But yeah, he was really good tonight. He was my man of the match, actually, in terms of all the players on the field, keeping us 0-0.
So in my line up, line down, my line down goes to the Orlando City SC Twitter account for not including Pedro Galese as a man of the match option, which is why I went to Dagradon, who I thought had a decent game, probably the best game out of anyone else that wasn't Ojeda or Galese, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure how Dagradon made Team of the Week, and I love Dagradon. It is noted of listeners to this podcast, although we haven't done it in a while, that I do love Dagradon. I think he's a really good player, and I think that he's going to have a great season. Not sure how he got on MLS Team of the Week.
He had a very standard game, I thought, and I know that I said in the instant reaction, I just would have liked to see what this match could have looked like in the last 10 to 15 minutes with Halliday instead of Dagradon at the back, just to have some of those overlapping runs and to stretch Montreal a little bit more, because we were so left-hand side focused. And a lot of that, I think, was because we had Santouche on the pitch. And if we had a threat on both ends, so someone who could stretch the field, could we have found a little bit more gaps in their back line? I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't have worked, probably wouldn't have, but I would have liked to see it instead of having Dagradon, because I thought at times his position seemed a little bit redundant, or his role, I should say. He played well, but yeah. Okay, that's all I've got on the match. Do you have anything else?
No, I mean, I do think that overall it is game one. We do have to take into account that they did just travel from Vancouver 2 days prior, and played a full starter match there. Because we were actually trying in that game. Montreal is not in Champions Cup, and they did not have to do that. And, you know, it is just one game. It is not the end of the world that we didn't beat Montreal. The XG, I think, was something like 3-0.8. You know, we did outplay them for 90 minutes, pretty much, the first 5 or so minutes notwithstanding. Things will be fine, especially when Muriel gets integrated, especially when Ladero gets more comfortable and knows where to find his passes and make runs. And hopefully with Ojeda getting more minutes, with Dagradon getting more and more used to playing right back instead of midfield, we're going to be fine. This is not a draw versus what could be a feisty Montreal team, by the way, is not the end of the world.
Agreed. All right, let's shift gears to the Cavalry match. So starting lineup here was a lot more rotated, so I'll just list it off. We've got Staj Dahar in goal, Halliday, Smith, Schlegel, and Santush at the back. We had Felipe Martins and Cartagena in midfield. We had Ojeda, Shaq Mohammed, Ramiro Enrique as the forwards, and then Luis Muriel as the striker option. So only thing with the lineup that I had was Shaq Mohammed. I think this is his first time we're seeing him with the first team. Is that correct in terms of starting?
Certainly his first start. I don't know if he's gotten like a minute here or there, but certainly his first start in a competitive match.
Yep, so that was cool to see. This was a good opportunity for him, and I'm glad Pareja used that opportunity. It was good to see Halliday back. You know, he was injured for a lot of the season and wasn't really selected that much towards the end. So it was good to see him get some minutes. And then, obviously, the biggest news was Luis Muriel getting the start. So what did you make on Muriel getting the nod in this match?
It was great to see him. Glad that he's got his visa issue sorted out. I think one of the funniest continuous memes of Orlando City is being a Florida-based club with apparently not good immigration lawyers. Because I think LA Galaxy signed Paint Sill after we signed Luis Muriel. And they got him on the pitch before we did. It's just funny to me sometimes how that works. But no, it was good to see him. You can't really pick a better match to get him a first start in, just to get his MLS feet wet. He hasn't been a regular starter in about a little over a year, I think. And so, you know, against I don't want to say inferior because it sounds mean, but against an inferior opponent, in a game where they're up 3-0 on aggregate, there's almost no consequences as long as you don't completely shit the bed, which we didn't. So, and it's not like Muriel's going to shit the bed anyway. It was really cool to see him just go out there and have fun, which is, I kind of think, what the instructions were.
Yeah, and he took the game really slowly, which I think was good. He didn't try too hard. You could see his level of professionalism and maturity in that aspect. This was a debut, but he wasn't, you know, running all over the place, flying into challenges, trying to impress. He just went out there and played his game. You know, he went out there, he was jogging around, did a little bit of pressing here and there. But in the ending stages of moves, he was the one getting on the end of them. He was the one creating chances for himself through his movement, through taking the ball on the half turn and dribbling forward. And eventually he's the one who wins the ball back and gets an assist. So, and we'll talk about that in a second, but really, really happy to see. And I was really impressed with his first performance, but again, inferior opposition as a qualifier there. For this match, we had another slow start. I'm not going to read too much into that because it was a shifted lineup, and I'm sure the instructions from the coaching staff would be, do not give them any hope in this match. Do not give them any goals. Do not let them score early. Just be calm, be professional, keep it simple. And so not too bothered by another slow start, but this is starting to be a little bit of a trend. And eventually we were in complete control of the match, had a lot of chances in the first half. A lot of half chances, I would say. You know, Enrique had a decent chance, but he toe-poked it. I think Muriel had a 1v1 in the first half that he could have done a bit better with. And then I think Enrique had a point-blank header, but that went straight to the goalkeeper. Any thoughts on the first half at all?
I'm really happy that Enrique ended up scoring. I'll just say that because the first half was rough.
Mm-hmm. He should have a goal.
I think he was the best player on the pitch for the first half, apart from he could not finish. He had, I think, 3 or 4 chances that could have conceivably ended up in the back of the net, and none of them did. And you could see it starting to get to him. I'm really happy that he did not get pulled before he could get one in, because you could see, I mean, when he scored that worldie, which I'm sure we will talk about in a minute, you could see that it was starting to get to him, and then just the relief on his face. And I was really happy for him to score, but I thought Enrique had a really good game, otherwise getting in dangerous positions and taking the shots, even if they didn't turn out all that great. Shaq Mohammed, you could tell it was his first start. I think that was painfully obvious. You could also tell he's a talented kid. The talent is absolutely there. I thought there were times when he almost the game slowed down for him and he stopped overthinking it and his talent shone through and he would pull out like a nice spin move or drove past a defender or, you know, make a nice run or make a nice pass or something. He's athletic. He's got some technical skill to him. He's willing to make the runs. He's willing to track back on defense. I know I've talked to a few people on, Orlando City Twitter and whatnot, and we kind of agree that he reminds us of Kevin Bellino a little bit in the way that he runs and the way that he plays the game, which certainly if his career turned out the same way, that would be a successful draft pick and successful career. So I'm hopeful. And still pretty young. He's much younger than Duncan. So like people getting worried about him not having the same immediate splash production as Duncan, he's, I think, 2 or 3 years younger. So he's definitely got time to develop before it becomes time to say, all right, I needed to put up or shut up. But I think him starting a game, getting 45 okay-ish minutes against probably the best competition he's ever faced, honestly, because with OCB, he's playing, you know, other developmental teams. These were legit professionals in a Champions Cup match on the other side, even though they are probably about USL quality, still probably the best competition he's ever faced. And so I was, other than the Flamengo match, but that was a friendly. So I'm happy for Shaq to actually start to get legitimately integrated into the first team and start to get some of those minutes.
Yeah, I agree. I like the Molino comparison, actually. And I agree with the not overthinking it comment, because there were moments where he would do that spin, he would get in behind, and then you could see it. He had a moment where he started thinking, ooh, what do I do? And the moment passed him by, and he didn't get the shot off. He didn't have the opportunity to put the through ball in anymore or something like that, and then he had to go back. And once he can get that speed of thought up and not overthinking it, but just doing it, he could turn into quite a good squad option for us. And he's only 20 years old. So you were right. He is much younger than Duncan McGuire. All right. Ladero and Araujo came on at halftime. Shakur Mohammed and Cartagena came off. I did like the switch for Cartagena. I thought that was good. Squad rotation, good squad management again. Give both of our starting defensive mids for this upcoming weekend half of a game. I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and definitely, like, I think also it was 0-0 at halftime. I think if we had been in the lead, Shaq might have gotten more than the 45 minutes, but it was like, all right, we do need to win this game. We do need to score here.
And we need our starting players or our top like 14 guys, 16 guys or whatever. We need them to get minutes right now. We're still early in the season. We need to build up that match fitness, that match sharpness. We've got some big games coming up, so we can't just throw it all away either and not play them at all. Maybe later on in the season when players are already match sharp, match fit, they're training every day, that's kind of when you could see a player completely skip out on a game. Let's get into the first goal. My favorite aspect of this goal is that it's Muriel who tracks back, wins the ball, dribbles forward, cuts it inside, and lays it off. It's all Muriel. And I don't want to get hate for this, but honestly, I can't see Duncan doing all of that, really. That's not his game, right? Do you agree, or am I talking smack?
No, I mean, I don't think it's a controversial thing to say that Luis Muriel is a much more technically skilled player than Duncan McGuire.
I guess that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
I do think it shows that, like you pointed out, that he was willing to track back and do all that work, how much respect he has for Oscar Pereja. Because generally, you're not going to see an aging striker that's played at the highest levels in Europe put forth that kind of defensive effort and then be willing to do all that work himself – to not even score the goal, to assist the goal. That speaks to the respect that he has for the way that Pareja wants to play and his willingness to buy into that system. I don't think that Dunk necessarily couldn't do it, but not necessarily that he would put it all together, because I've seen him do all those parts individually before. But to put it all together is what makes special players special.
I agree. That's a way better way said than how I said it. Because that's what I'm thinking. Like, that's where the upgrade is for me on Duncan with Muriel. As good as Duncan is and as great as his movement is and as hard as he works defensively, putting it all together, being able to win the ball back, dribble it forward, cut inside, lay it off perfectly for a easy slot home finish by Ladero. That's what I like to see. And that is where I see the difference and the upgrade between Duncan and Muriel. So that's the Ladero goal, 1-0. We do get pegged back 1-1. My biggest anger or fault here, if you will, is I think Schlegel gets caught ball watching on the goal. I don't know if you've watched the goal in detail or you just know that we conceded. Yes. Okay. Yeah. For me, I'm a little like, what is Schlegel doing? Clear the ball, my guy.
So I was talking with Mike from Lion's Den, and he did a deep dive analysis on that concession where Schlegel was at fault, and he came up with the following analysis. I have no idea what Schlegel was doing. I have watched it over 10 times, and I could not tell you how that ball gets past him. It was a howler. It's the kind of mistake that Schlegel makes from time to time and you just have to live with. And it's the kind of mistake that makes us buy David Brekalo.
Yep, absolutely. I'm glad Mike agrees. Mike's a smart man. Mike, if you're listening, I'm glad you and I are on the same page. I actually saw him at the game. In the second half, we ended up sitting by him. Cool. So that was the Bevin goal. I just thought overall it was way too easy. Way too easy for them. Halliday doesn't get tight enough, doesn't end up blocking the cross, but that's not my main concern. Crosses are going to get through. Schlegel is just all over the place.
There was another time on, I forget if it was a set piece or I think it was a set piece, that they just had a really, really, really free header.
Yep. First half.
I think it was, they had more space than a team of their comparative quality probably should have had due to it was a back line that is not our first choice back line, doesn't play together that much, blah, blah, blah. Calgary had some chances.
Yeah, they did. And with some better quality, that would have been a much nervier game. And we probably would have had to bring on the big boys a little bit sooner. But instead, we were the ones taking the chances yet again. Second goal is Enrique's goal. What a goal. What a goal. What a beautiful goal. If we score another goal like that this season, it would be fantastic. But like we talked about earlier, he needed a goal based on his performance tonight. I agree. He looked stellar. Just it was in front of goal where he fell short. But eventually he did deliver with a banger.
Miro said bangers only. Bangers only.
Yeah. And he likes that spot. He likes that spot in terms of finishing a goal. He seems to cut in every now and then and just unleash one.
He might be the best really difficult finisher on the team. Not necessarily the best finisher. That's obviously Duncan. Hopefully Muriel. But in Orlando City uniform so far, it's obviously Duncan. But just the really, really difficult finishes, Enrique's got something to him.
Yeah, just figures out how to get in the back of the net. So I was impressed with his performance, obviously impressed with that goal. And then Kyle Smith's goal. Yet again, we get a goal from attacking our left, their right, against Cavalry. Do you put that down more to maybe a weakness we spotted? Or do you think it's just we're building up a lot down the left? Because we build up a lot down the left against Montreal as well. I think we have four out of our six goals came from that, from our left-hand side in this tie.
Well, I think Ojeda also likes to play a lot down the left, and he played a really big part in this game. which we haven't talked about, but Ojeda was also stellar in this game, but nothing super, super individually noteworthy. He just had a really good game, played a lot down the left. Aladero drifts a little more right, but it was Ojeda carrying the ball down the left. It was Santos being the primary crosser down the left. Halliday on the other side didn't get the ball as much. Just, you have a starter on one side and a non-starter on the other. That's going to happen. I just think that, and then obviously Torres came in later, and also he prefers to go down the left if he's going vertical. I think it just happened to be that way. And the team kind of happens to be that way, that this team is a little bit of, and Ramiro Henrique is also a left-sided player. This team is just kind of a left-sided team.
Yeah, which is interesting because we used to be a very right-sided team. So we've shifted over for sure. But Kyle Smith gets on the score sheet with a great finish. He's been doing pretty well offensively as of recent. I went back and dug up the preseason results, the tweets from Orlando City's Twitter account. And he obviously scored tonight. And then in two of the games in preseason, he got one goal and one assist as well. So Kyle Smith has been showing up with the goal contributions recently. It was actually a pretty good finish.
To borrow another Lions, or not Lions Den cast member, we got Eddie calls him Kyle Chenko from time to time.
That's funny. Yeah. He actually was the one who put in the cross as well that ended up in a goal, but it was called a back off sides against Montreal. So could have had four near goal contributions. That obviously wasn't an assist, but anyways.
He's got the Kyle Smith golden boot in the pool. Anyone have that?
Not me.
I think Matt Doyle took him or something.
Must have been. Subs. Facu Torres. I mean, my question here was going to be more around, like, was it necessary to put him in this game? But I kind of said earlier, the balance of building fitness versus at this point in the season versus resting. I mean, do you agree with that take, or did we really need to see him in this game?
No. Am I going to fault Pareja for sticking to his plan? And probably he probably had minutes mapped out for everyone to sub in that he was going to sub in before the game even started. And nothing really happened in the game to make him deviate from that plan. So he probably planned for Facu to get, just a little bit of run out to keep his legs fresh and sharp. Because you don't want, especially at the beginning of the season, you don't want your guys just sitting for 90 minutes, especially your top guys. So yeah, I don't have a huge problem with it.
Fair. Okay. Other substitutions we haven't talked about yet. Abdi Salim came in. Jack Lynn came in. It was nice to see them get some game time. I wish we would have seen Kasewski. I don't know if you saw him against Flamengo, but he looked pretty decent in the Flamengo preseason match. We haven't seen him at all this season. I thought this was the perfect opportunity to get him onto the pitch, but he just wasn't selected. So that was a bit disappointing.
I was surprised he didn't start, actually.
Yeah.
And him and Felipe.
Yeah.
But I understand also Wilder only had 45 minutes due to his shenanigans against Montreal. So I understand him getting the start, and I understand getting Caesar the other 45. Like, I get that. I'm kind of surprised that Kasewski didn't come in for Felipe, but you only have so many subs. Right. But with Shaq getting the start, that kind of seems like he's the other guy that would get one.
Yep.
If not Fabian Loyola, but clearly that train is probably not going to leave the station at any point at this point. Although I do rate him in the games I've watched him with OCB, but maybe he's still a bit young or something, but seems like someone who's not going to get his chance. Anyway, I do agree. I think especially with our lack of depth at midfield, we're probably going to see Duggar down there at some point this season. Especially with schedule congestion. My question is Kasewski above or behind Kyle Smith on the CM depth chart?
Hopefully above.
Hopefully above, but he is still a rookie and he does, I think, need to prove himself before playing super competitive minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's why I thought this was the perfect opportunity, because he's not going to have the Open Cup. So, and he's not going to play against Tigres unless there's a disaster in midfield.
Well, no, not Tigres. I hope not Tigres, but there are talks about the Open Cup that there are going to be the 8 MLS first teams in, but we might see our B teams play. Which
like the MLS Next Pro?
Yeah, absolutely could play with OCB, I think.
That's fair. Okay. I didn't realize that, so it's good to know. Okay, let's move on to previewing Miami and Tigres coming up. Not going to spend too much time on this. The biggest question that seems to be coming up is how do we manage the squad with 2 huge games coming up so close together? I think we had a question on that. Yeah, at @MichaelDB_. How heavily do we rotate between the upcoming 2 games? I think we ball out with basically the same lineup in both with very minor tweaks in the attack. So how are you thinking we should manage these games coming up?
I know the Miami game is huge because of the implications. It's just an MLS regular season game. It's not a Champions Cup game. The Tigres game is inarguably the bigger game to me. I don't care that Messi's in the other one. I really could not care less that Messi's in the other game. It's still just 3 MLS points up for grabs. That's it. We get Tigres at home. We get the opportunity to punch first in that matchup. I think if I were Oscar Pereja, which I'm not, and there's good reasons that I'm not, he has forgotten more about soccer than both of us combined will ever know. But I would rotate against Miami. I would play, Felipe Martins would start that game for me. You know, okay. Rodrigo Schlegel would start that game for me. Mikey Halliday would start that game for me. You know, I would give Miami the 3 points, and I hate that. I hate it so much. But if you look at the flip side of that, Tigres is playing a very competitive schedule right now. They have their own schedule congestion. They just played a very competitive match against Pachuca, in which Gignac had to score an 87th minute winner, which they are currently tied in Liga MX standings. So they just played a stressful match. And they're coming to our house, which is significant travel from Monterrey. If we just kind of decide not to play our full effort against Miami, then we could have the upper hand rest-wise versus Tigres at home, maybe even win that game, go into them not only needing a draw to advance in a bigger tournament than MLS.
Yep.
Especially since the real MLS trophy isn't a regular season trophy. It's the playoffs. We're making the playoffs. We don't need to beat Miami in this game to make the playoffs. We don't need to beat them in this game to get a home playoff game, be a top 4 seed. We don't even need to beat them in this game to win the Supporters Shield. It's just one game. For me, I would rotate against Miami and give ourselves the best shot against Tigres. And I understand you want to go balls to the wall against Miami. I understand you want to kill them. I do get all that. As a fan, I would love to beat them 4-0 or whatever. But I think it's not good schedule and man management to play your first team and go balls to the wall against Miami and then expect to match up well with the most expensive team in North America 2 days later.
Yeah, I'm in agreement for the most part that Tigres is obviously the priority here. Obviously, Tigres is the priority here. What I do want to see against Miami is a team who's going to go out there, just work really hard. I do want to see us work them because I think we could put out a rotated lineup, have them work very, very hard, and beat them. Like, I think just pure effort is good enough to beat that Miami team, you know, defensively and offensively. Defensive effort, obviously, you're going to need because they have Messi who can do whatever he wants whenever he wants. And so you're going to have to clamp him down for the entire 97 minutes, whatever it's going to be. Offensively, though,
yeah, they get that World Cup stoppage time.
Yeah. Offensively, there's going to be transition opportunities. I would love to see like a Ramiro Henrique come in and start the match and see him on the break on the left side. And then, you know, maybe it is Halliday who can bomb up that right side as well and just test them on the break. They, LA Galaxy should have had 5 goals against them the other night. And it was just down to their poor execution. I mean, they missed a penalty, for goodness sakes. Like, Galaxy should have had 3, 4, 5 goals in that match. Ended up only getting 1, and it came back to bite them. If we're just a little bit more clinical, we could have 3 goals in 60 minutes, and then we just clamp it down. And I would love to see a rotated lineup that just works extremely hard. And then from there, you know, if the game is still in jeopardy, maybe you back off to save some legs for the Tigres match, maybe at 60 minutes. But I think we have a chance against Miami for sure. I don't think they're as dominant as everyone's making them out to be. And then, yeah, Tigres is priority. Go ahead.
So for Miami, I think you put Duncan McGuire in and you let him run his abs off, especially with Muriel now available for selection. You put Duncan McGuire in, you play him 90 minutes. I think you start Ramiro Henrique, probably start Martin Ojeda because, like it or not, he's not the starter right now. So I think that's your top three. And I think you go Felipe, Dagerdon, and Kosevsky in the middle. Maybe Cartagena or Caesar, but
probably Caesar. He seems to be more in shape in these types of games.
Put Caesar in because I think he wants another crack at Messi.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I bet he does.
And then, you know, Schlegel and Janssen. You can play your back line, I think.
And honestly, we can start the game.
Right back.
Sorry, we can start the game with like a slightly rotated squad and then finish it with our starters as well. We can give our starters 20 minutes in this match and it will be okay.
That too, like say it's 1-1 in the 65th minute, then you sub on a couple guys and see if you can get that late goal.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly normal and the players aren't going to be dead on their feet against Tigres. I think that would be fine. I think Ojeda has to start this match against Miami. He's going to make it so many runs in behind, and if we can get him the ball onside, he's gonna get a goal on transition. He's just that good on the break, and he's that automatic in front of goal.
Oh, absolutely. I think Ojeda, Romero, and Duncan can grab 2 goals between them. The question is whether they can do it with not that much support from midfield and fullbacks.
That's fair. Yep. Okay. I think that's good enough preview for those 2 matches. I don't know enough about Tigres other than Liga MX. They're a good side. Last thing I'll say is we've got a lot coming up, right? So this is why we're talking about squad management. When we just currently we've already done Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday schedule. So we've done Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, and then coming up we have Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Sunday, Saturday. That is a lot right at the beginning of the season. So squad management and squad rotation is going to be a really important topic of conversation over these next few weeks, and hopefully we keep doing a good job at it. So far, so good. Any predictions for these matches from you?
I think we probably draw Miami. My cat says hi. What are you doing? I think we probably draw Miami. That feels kind of right. And then we'll have, you know, the competitive match with them at our place later this season. And then I think my heart wants us to beat Tigres. I also know that we're probably not going to rotate as much against Miami as you and I might want us to.
Oh, yeah.
I also know that Miami game is going to be a hard-fought and stressful game just because the boys will be up for it. And that's good, but they're going to play their asses off and they're going to be tired. And I do know that Tigres is going to have a couple more days of rest, technically, than us going into that game. I think we're going to give our all against Tigres. We are at home. I think it'll be a hard-fought 1-1 draw or 0-0 draw against Tigres. It's what my head is saying. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll lose. I think we have a better chance to lose against Miami than lose against Tigres, honestly. Just because I could see, say, rotate the lineup, Messi gets two goals, we kind of give up and say, you check guys out and say, okay, on to Tigres. I think that's more likely a loss. I don't think we lose at home to Tigres, because I think especially the Evan Weston reported earlier this season when the Champions League or Champions Cup draw came out, that we had Tigres in our part of the bracket, that was big in the locker room, and that the guys who were here played against them last season wanted another crack at them. Mm-hmm. I think that's the circled match on the counter. I don't think Miami is the one with the circle around it. I think Tigres is the match with the circle around it. And I think that's the one they'll be up for the most. And so I don't see a loss as a big probability there, especially at home. But I think it'll probably be a draw just because we might be a bit overmatched.
Yeah, I'm going to take loss against Miami and win against Tigres, actually. Those would be my predictions. I agree that the players want Tigres. That hurt last season, for sure. That one hurt. If we could progress past them, we have a real chance in this tournament. Okay, let's go into season expectations. I asked these same questions to Daniel, so I will ask them to you.
One more thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Guess who our most likely opponents are if we get past Tigres?
I haven't seen the bracket. I don't know. Pachuca?
Miami and Columbus.
Who would you prefer?
We could go Tigres, Miami, Columbus, which are three teams that knocked us out of knockout competitions last year.
Is it Miami?
Miami's going to win their first. Are you kidding me? Miami's going to win.
No. But is it Miami or Columbus?
No. It'd be Miami and Columbus. We would play both of them.
Really? So yes. Who is Columbus against?
I don't know, but they're going to beat them.
Okay. So let's see. CONCACAF, Champions Cup.
Is bracket. Big favorite to get out of their side of the bracket.
Okay, let's see. I've got a picture here. Okay, Columbus would play Houston. Got it. And then Columbus would, if we were to get past Tigres, we'd face Columbus first in the quarterfinals. And then on the other side of the bracket is Miami, and they're facing the winner of Monterrey and Cincinnati.
So I think Miami probably comes out of that side.
Really?
I think Miami is significantly better tournament team than they are a league team.
That's fair, but I could really see Monterrey. I mean, Miami's defense is bad.
Yeah, that's why I think they're a better tournament team.
Fair.
In a tournament game, you know the refs are gonna be on Messi's side. You know that Messi's gonna be up for it. Like, they look great in Leagues Cup in those single one-off knockout matches where, like, the tension, that the emotions were running high and all that. And then they got to league play when it was kind of just another game, and they looked like shit.
Yeah. True. Well, first we have to get past Tigres if we want to consider it. So we shall see.
But if Cincinnati or Monterrey are on the other side of that too, that's still murder's row.
Yeah, it is. And then obviously the final after that. Season expectations. How are you feeling about the squad? How are you feeling personally about the squad?
My personal opinion is that I would have gone super huge at 10 instead of super huge at striker. with the DP slot. And that I would have probably tried to make Duncan McGuire as happy as possible and keep him through the rest of the season, or do like some sort of loan back deal. And that I would like to have Nico Ladero be a backup, in my opinion. To me, the key is Martin Ojeda at that point, because I do not think Ladero has the legs and the sharpness at his age to be an elite level central playmaker for the entirety of what might well be a 45-50 game season.
I agree with all of that.
And so I love what I think we're going to see from Luis Muriel. I love his creativity, his penchant for the spectacular. I think that's going to fit in real well. And I do like the coverage he provides us should Duncan leave in the summer. I think I would rather try and scrap together production from a striker position than scrap together production from the number 10 position. And I think that's kind of where we are. And if Ojeda doesn't show up in a big way and kind of say, I'm here and I'm an elite playmaker and you are going to put me on the pitch no matter what, I think we probably fall short of the expectations that we want to reach.
I agree. I 100% agree with all of that. I said in the last podcast, I don't want Ladero being the starting attacking midfielder. I want him to be the backup. I want him to be a squad option, not the go-to guy.
Now, the corollary to that is if we do get the offensive production that we're looking for from whatever source, it doesn't need to be from a 10. It could be, you know, just we're hitting crosses, we're banging in goals, Bricallo's getting 5-goal contributions. Like, it can be that. It's just, I think, more likely with how we want to play is there's got to be a guy in the middle that unlocks everyone, because that's kind of how this team is constructed. And so, but if we are getting, you know, the 1.5-2 goals a game that we need, the defense is so good. So I, Bracalo is going to be a stud, man. Like, his style, he's aggressive where Janssen is. And we don't think, you know, of Janssen as a passive player, but Janssen is much more of a field vision, read the play, get in a good position type center back, whereas Bracalo is out for blood. And I think that's going to be a really productive partnership for us. We also have potentially the two best fullbacks in the league, or the best fullback pairing in the league. You know, there are some other teams like Cincinnati comes to mind that have some really good ones too. Philly always.
They just lost Barrial though, and I think they also lost their right back. I think they just lost both of them.
I thought Barrial was still with them. Okay, well, I mean,
he left.
Even so, not about other teams. Santos and Dagrudan could both be all-star caliber fullbacks mm-hmm. for us. The defense, I think, will be spectacular. Pedro Galese is a top 5 goalkeeper in this league. And we're not going to give up that many goals. There's going to be a lot of ones and zeros in the other team's score column. If we can be on ones and twos, then we're going to have a lot of success. If we're also on ones and zeros, then it's going to be a long season.
Yep, for sure. All right, where do you have us in the table? Eastern Conference.
Eastern Conference.
Doesn't have to be exact. It can be like a range.
I got Cincy at 1. I love the addition of Miles Robinson for them. I think that's huge. Mm-hmm. I think that their weak spot, if any, was at times their defense. And also, I love Bupenza for them getting, you know, integrated as a full-time starter this season. They still have the reigning MVP in Lucho Acosta. I think that's probably still – and the defending Shield champions. They're, in my opinion, still the team to beat in the East. After that, you have the Crew. I have the Crew who are just running it back from a team that was probably the best team in the league over the second half of last season other than us. And – the eventual MLS Cup champions, and they just score in bunches, man. Cucho's my pick for maybe best player in this league other than Messi. what an incredible player Cucho is. Spectacular routine. Yeah, he does really it like all. Him. Tracks back. He plays well with others. I would have us in that. We could be one. We could be three. I would have us at three right now. I think Crew and Cincy have better rosters. I wouldn't be surprised to see a team like Atlanta be three and us be four. Because Atlanta, I think, has the potential to be scoring like 2.5 goals a game. I think obviously the elephant in the room is Miami. There's a world in which Miami wins the Shield. I don't think it's this world. I think Miami probably gets like sixth or seventh place, makes the playoffs. They're not going to lose every game. They have too much technical skill to lose that many games. I think they make the playoffs, but I think they're like an average regular season team when it's all said and done, and a better tournament team than regular season team.
Yeah, my guess is they're aiming just to make the playoffs, and once they make it, they feel they can go on a run to try and win it, which they very well could. Yeah,
yeah, I basically have us between 2 and 4.
That's where I had us, 2 to 4. Yep. Okay, and then we did over-unders, so we'll do this really quickly. Facundo Torres over-under 14.5 goals this season. All competitions.
Over, but 6 of them are pens.
Fair. And then goal contributions, 20.5.
Again, over, but 6 of them are pens.
The other thing Daniel mentioned, we both said over as well, is if he stays the whole season.
I don't see him not. He just signed a new deal. Even if someone comes calling in the summer, I bet we get a loan back. Just because it makes no sense to give up your star guy in the middle of what should be, and Oscar Preha said it, they expect to compete for silverware this season and win at least one trophy. I don't see how a team that has those expectations just gives up their best player in the middle of that season.
Yeah, it would have to be something like what Columbus did, where they got rid of Celarayan and instantly got somebody else in Diego Rossi.
If we're selling Fabio Torres and immediately bringing in like Dar Skeda from Flamengo, right? Okay, that's right, unlikely.
But yeah,
very that's unlikely.
This was an interesting one. Ojeda, so you have a little bit more information than what Daniel had previously. 24.5 starts in MLS.
Under.
I said under as well. Daniel had said over. Put you for under.
Under. I hate that. It probably around 17 or 18, I think.
Last season he got 16. Unfortunate. Ojeda, 15.5 goal contributions, all competitions.
Clear over.
Galese, 9.5 clean sheets.
What did he have last season?
I want to say he got 10. In the season before that, I think he had 9.
I think this is the best defense that he's played with, actually. So I'm going to go over on that.
All right. He's already at 1, so good start. That was clean sheets in MLS. Sorry, not all competitions. Myrdiel, I put 11.5 goals because I just wasn't sure.
I want it to be over. Something in me says under.
Under, like 10 or 9 or something?
Yeah, so like 9 or 10. It's just something in me thinks, like, if he's not going to get the service that we want him to get, then maybe not. And he's not going to be taking pens more than likely. So I think, I mean, the under's got to be somewhere. I think it's probably at the striker position, or we're also we have Duncan McGuire, also Ramiro Uribe. He's not going to be getting every single striker minute.
Yeah, right. This one was a fun one. Janssen, 9.5 yellow cards.
Oh, I hope under. 9.5?
In all competitions, 2 seasons ago, he had 9. And then last season, I think he had like 7 or 8. So he's around there.
I think Captain Janssen is going to have a little bit more freedom from the referee.
I hope so.
So I'm going to hope that's an under.
And then I said date of Duncan Maguire's departure before or after July 15th.
July 16th?
Yeah. So, okay.
Wait. Oh, when does the transfer window open? It's July 1st, right?
Yep.
Before.
You
think I think we'll have a deal worked out before the window opens.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, so let's get into the Twitter questions and let's get out of here. We already did one of them, the one from Michael. At MCFC Tommy, I thought this was going to be a serious one because he usually does. What scale of match fixing do we see in the Derby?
So I don't want to get into this because last season we had a whole episode bitching about this. I think it's impossible to trust that MLS is going to play fair with Miami this season. I don't know if that constitutes match fixing in regular season games, but I do think that especially the replacement referees are intimidated by Messi. I definitely think that. If you watched the Miami versus LA Galaxy game, Sergio Busquets should have been off in the first half for multiple yellow card offenses, and he ended up getting Marky Delgado sent off on a second yellow on a flop. So they're going to get those calls the entire season. Whether or not that's match fixing, you know, I'll let you decide what your definition of that is. Do I think Miami's going to get favorable calls literally the entire season? Yes. Do I think that they're going to have any consequences to answer to for any of the shady practices they do with their roster building? No. Do I think the league will assist them in getting whatever player that they want to get on the roster through the various salary cap mechanisms? I do. The Kamal Miller trades are a prime example of that. If you are not familiar with the circumstances of both Kamal Miller trades for them, it basically works out to Kamal Miller being worth like 2.5 million GAM plus a couple players, which is fucking ridiculous.
I'm pretty sure some of the best MLS players have gone for less than that.
For Jesus Ferreira,
half of that.
Jesus Ferreira's reported asking price from Dallas was like 3 million ish game.
Yeah.
So Kamal Miller, Jesus Ferreira, same basically.
Yeah.
It's we're not stupid. That's what's happening. I don't know that necessarily the players on Miami are cheating. I don't necessarily know that the officials are being paid off. I don't necessarily know that they're going to blatantly call things to fix matches. I don't know that. Is it fair? No. But it's what's happening.
Feel that. All right. Last question here at Fresco Esco. Shout out to Alex. If they were to retire one Orlando City player number so far, who would be the one you guys would pick?
I mean, it's tough to retire a jersey number.
Yeah. That has to be like a legend.
I mean, maybe not retire the number, but like hang up a jersey in the stadium or something, or like a Ring of Honor. Let's call it a Ring of Honor thing. If we're going to start a Ring of Honor, who would be the first? My pick would be Mauricio Pereira.
And really?
I think that's a safe choice. Well, also, he just left the team. He was
after dust to our first trophy.
First captain to win a trophy in the MLS era. Beloved by everyone at the club. I think if they were to start a Ring of Honor this year, and of course it can't be an active player, and a lot of our legends are active players. Just kind of because of the nature of the history of Orlando City.
Yep.
I think if they were to start a Ring of Honor, Mauricio Pereira would be a fine first inductee.
Yeah, the only other name that comes to mind, only here for, what, 3 seasons, but Luis Nani?
Nani would be second, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But does what Nani did constitute, say, like, a Hall of Fame level contribution. He brought us out of the dark ages, but he never won anything as captain or, you know,
yeah,
as a member of the roster. Kind of what is, when you look back in on in 20 years and hopefully, you know, we have some sort of sustained success and we don't go back to how it was before, just through better organizational doing the competence. When you look back at that, are we going to really remember Luis Nani as a legendary figure at Orlando City for bringing us to the light? I probably don't think so. I think Mauricio Pereira's legacy will age better.
Yeah, I think that's fair. If we had to pick one, I think he would be my pick. Unless you want to say like Dom Dwyer from his USL days, but I'm assuming this is more from MLS era.
I think so. It would have to be MLS. If it was USL days, I think I would go, I mean, Dom's a good shout. I think I would go Miguel Gallardo.
Oh yeah, probably.
Just in terms of how he's stayed involved with the club and become sort of a club ambassador.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Of Orlando City and also was a huge part of those championship teams in MS and USL.
Yeah. All right, I think that's where we will finish up. Good discussion, Adam. Anything else you want to say before we're done tonight?
Well, if you are interested in Cappy's food trucking at Orlando City games, we have a couple dates booked. March 9th versus Minnesota is our first game of the season, and then whoever we're playing on the 23rd, I forget who that is. But we're also doing the match on the March 23rd, and hopefully a bunch more home matches after that this season. Had a little bit of schedule congestion on my end of things, so I wasn't able to do the first few matches, but we will be there soon enough.
That's at Broken Strings?
Oh, yeah, that is at Broken Strings. Sorry for being unclear. That is the food truck at Broken Strings Brewery, about a 10-minute walk from the stadium. It's a good place. It's where the Ruckus gathers before their march. It's, you know, fantastic beer, a bunch of Orlando City fans. It's a good time, but that will be like before. That'll be for pre-match parties. We are fortunately not in the stadium this season. Just things didn't work out like that. It is what it is. But we are still going to be bringing the Orlando City spirit through Cappy's.
We'll have to see some more purple bread, my friend. All right.
Well, we'll bring that up for the very big games.
Yeah, the very, very big games. All right. Well, you can follow me at Lions Blog One. You can follow the podcast at Lions Blog One. Same thing. Adam, where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me personally on Twitter at Kosher Taco Truck, and on you can follow the Cappy's Food Truck and see where we are on Twitter and Instagram at Cappy's Food Truck.
Good stuff. All right. Well, have a good rest of your night, my friend. And listeners, hope you enjoyed. And as always, Vamos Orlando.
Vamos.
To put in all the work, everybody, for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit. And we work our goals together as one.
From Martins, it's Sven Angulo to cross into the box. That's one missed kick. Star!